Well, hello there, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of Cambridge Inside Out. My name is Robert Winters, and this week we have as our co-host, Mr. Patrick Barrett. Introduce yourself, sir.
Well, yeah, thank you. I think it's a bold claim to say this is going to be an exciting edition, but you know, it might be. I'm Patrick Barrett. I am co-chair of the BID in Central Square, as well as the owner of the beautiful 907 Hotel, Dial Restaurant, and Blue Owl Rooftop Bar, and a staunch capitalist.
That is true. And as I often like to say to people, I'm a staunch capitalist, but a very bad capitalist. So anyway, Patrick, you were on this program about a month ago.
Yep.
And we primarily talked at that time about a couple of pieces of business that are before Cambridge City Council currently, though neither of which are put into effect, namely BUDO, which stands for Building
Energy Use Disclosure Ordinance.
So that's beautiful. Beautiful. Yeah.
And then it's pronounced BUDO, not Beto or Buedo, or it's just BUDO.
All righty. So, and then the other one was what's technically referred to as incentive zoning payments, yeah, which mainly goes through by the term linkage,
which is kind of a funny name, right? I don't really feel an incentive to do much with an incentive zoning payment. So,
right. It actually, I think in a way, linkage is a better term, because what it basically, the idea was, is that if there's commercial development happening, even this all needs revision, of course, but commercial development happening may have an impact, because if it's bringing job and putting a lot more demand on the housing stock or whatever, that therefore every square foot of development of larger projects, at least commercial development, yeah, should kick in some money into a fund that would then be used to in some way relieve the pressure on local housing.
Sure.
Is that a fair summary?
That's fair. And you know, in fact, there's been a lot of exciting new developments since last we spoke on this. So I'm kind of excited to speak to you about it. In particular, the planning board, I think for maybe the first time ever, heard the methodology behind incentive zoning, and they continued the case, I was happy to say, because it seemed to be somewhat flabbergasting. Because as you just described, the methodology behind linkage is what they do is they try to determine which commercial use is going to have the highest impact on affordable housing. Now, which use do you think would do that in the city right now? About all the things we're building, all the things we can build commercially, what do you think has the biggest impact on housing?
Well, I mean, if it was back in the 1980s, it would have been the explosive growth of the sort of the data, you know, computer industries, okay, in Kendall Square and Lotus Development and things like that. But today, life science has taken over, and it's all about the labs.
Wrong. So that is how the planning board, I believe, thought. I think that's how most people think, that labs, because they bring in lots of high earners, and those high earners in turn go and look into our neighborhoods for housing, and in, you know, a very real way are able to pay lots more money, et cetera. But that's not how linkage works. The methodology behind linkage right now says that the type of industry drives who most likely will seek affordable housing. So the highest impact use right now, according to the community development department, are restaurants, because restaurants hire people at a lower wage, and therefore people who make a lower wage are more likely to seek support for housing. Therefore, that use has the highest impact on incentive zoning fees.
Well, this is really kind of insane.
Yeah,
but so now the debate, or really what is the matter of business that is before, I believe it would be the ordinance committee currently, is really the proposal to add on to, they did an increase in the amount of dollar per square foot. It used to be something about $12 or something, and they kicked it up to, or it was so, actually, what was it again?
I forget the numbers. In 2015, there was a big kerfuffle about this, and they raised it from like $3 to $12 with the idea it's going to increase a dollar. That was my dog in the background. That was Russell. I apologize. It's going to increase a dollar every year until I believe now we're at $21 and change. And the city council's proposal is to bring it up to $34. Just so we have a basis of comparison, Somerville is currently at 12. And Boston, I believe, is somewhere between 10 and 18, but they are also considerably lower than where we are right now. But there's a whole layer of nuance, which I know people hate, because we like for our issues to be somewhat black and white, read the headline, not the subtext. Boston's threshold for these linkage fees to kick in is 100,000 square feet. Somerville's is 30,000 and Cambridge is 30,000. So you build a commercial building, 30,001 square feet, the entire building now will be taxed at that $21 and eventually the $33 rate, because that's just how it works.
All right, so it seems to me that the ordinance committee is basically pondering the wrong questions right now. I mean, they're basically saying, well, it used to be $3 and then it went to 12. It's probably up at 15, 16 or whatever now. And we want to basically double it because we're seeing this not so much in terms of incentive zoning or anything really, mm-hmm. so much as just a cash cow that we can milk for to get more money to put into affordable housing trust, which may be the world's most noble goal. But the question but it doesn't seem to me that the question before them should be to sort of look at the whole structure of what this incentive zoning is really.
It was required as part of that 2015 change to look at it every 3 years, which might be an overly aggressive schedule, but that's what we've done. We have a 2019 Nexus study that was issued in November of 2019 that sort of shows what the impacts have been. And the good news is it's brought in a ton more money for affordable housing. That is true. But if you look at the development schemes over the past 10 years in Cambridge, which was inclusive of this change, about 94% of what's being built in Cambridge commercially is lab. So when you think about how a city works and how, and from a planning perspective, what we've essentially told developers, if you're not building a lab, you're probably not going to be financially viable. So if you want anything, like think of it in our cultural district, if we wanted to build a 30,000 square foot version of Starlight Square, which is that outdoor stage everyone seems to like, except for, you know, the people who live next to it, you know, that would be taxed at the same linkage rate as a Pfizer lab of the same size. And, you know, the interesting piece of that is, one, it just on its face seems kind of ludicrous that we would do that. But from the community development department standpoint, this is all part of doing business in Cambridge. You know, it was a frustrating point that, you know, this is coming from the city council. We have a planning board hearing, which they continued really just to understand more how this system works. And, you know, within 5 seconds, the Councillor Zondervan runs to Twitter to lambast the planning board as not caring about affordable housing. Now, I kind of feel like the affordable housing group, the activists in this group, they're like a hammer and everything is a nail. There's no nuance to it. There's no, we need to build more than just labs and affordable housing. I'm sorry, it's just true. Right. I don't think your most ardent housing advocates would suggest otherwise.
You know, this sort of, I mean, I think what you're describing is what I would just call the sort of a one-dimensional view of this entire enterprise. You know, they're seeing everything purely in terms of fund generation for affordable housing, whereas in fact, they should be actually looking at sort of what the actual impacts are in terms of planning and development itself, and sure. not just the amount of money that can be generated. It kind of makes me, it reminds me in a kind of a twisted little way of what happened during that K2C2 process, where prior to that,
K2C2? You made that.
Well, okay. All right. Well, that was a few years ago. But back then, if somebody said, well, what constitutes community benefit?
Right.
95% of the response would be, well, we need to put more money into the Affordable Housing Trust of your affordable housing. Sure. And again, I'm not in any way denigrating the concept of affordable housing. But the thing
that
is,
would be sacrilege.
That would be sacrilege.
But it would be a heathen, and we'd have to drag you out of town. Sorry.
Right. But there was a glimmer of hope that came out of that process, which is that people started acknowledging the fact that there are things like ground floor retail that actually benefit communities, especially if it can be somehow made to be so-called affordable, you know, or you know, at least accessible in a reasonable sort of way, because that's actually what helps to build neighborhoods as well. And I celebrated this because I thought, well, okay, so it's not just one-dimensionally talking about jacking up more money toward basically to subsidize housing, but it was actually looking more broadly at other things of value.
So
this is similar.
That to me has been my argument in a nutshell. There's more to life than labs and affordable housing. And I think if you want to, before when I came here to talk to you about this, I told you how I felt like zoning was sort of this roadmap about who we are. You know, it tells me what we care about. If I'm an alien landing from a distant planet. So if I showed up here, you know, but from a financial perspective, a lab will command an order of magnitude more rent than any other kind of use, literally any other kind of use. It's almost a factor of five. When they're appraised by the banks and when the bank goes through their financial assessment of viability, a lab is going to command, you know, 3 to 4 times the end value of a building of the same size in any other use category. So in a city like Cambridge, where you have a nice flow of traffic from universities, from the biotech industry, we need restaurants, we need hotels, we need entertainment facilities. In the cultural district of Cambridge, I want to see, more music venues. I want to see more uses. A Dave and Buster's is a pipe dream, but like I want things that draw us to our district, that turn Central Square into the entertainment district it is always meant to be. But right now, everything tells me to build a lab. And it's not just for new construction. If I rehabilitate an existing building substantially, according to the language, that also will trigger incentive zoning. So any guy who's looking to rehabilitate an existing structure, he's literally looking at labs. It's the only thing that makes sense to build. And then you might get your nice little cafe in the first floor for the retail component. But that's just the give me.
It's like a throwaway at that point.
It is a throwaway.
Yeah. I mean, it does seem to me politically, when you hear development proposals coming down the pike, it's like you're waiting for the shoe to drop, and then they say, oh, well, we're actually planning to put labs in. And then it becomes sort of the political fight about, well, how do we stop the lab, because we don't want to have the lab here. You know, it's never a matter of creating an attraction and incentives for the things you want. So it's more like, you've decided that everything is one dimensional. So it's just a matter of how are we going to do battle?
I love labs. Like I think labs are great to some degree. I don't want only labs, in the same way I don't only want mattress stores. It is something that you have to think about in terms of how you plan a district. Do we turn Cambridge into one giant office park? And the reigning argument on the other side of this is that the fee is no big deal. And you've used math before, right, Robert?
I believe I have. There's some flotsam and jetsam of my life.
You're going to be very helpful in this next lab, in this next math problem. The construction cost for a lab is about 2 to 3 times that of any other kind of build. So if I'm building, let's say same size structure, if my budget for a lab is $120 million, my similar budget for a same size building of not a lab use is going to be around, 45, 50 million, a little less than half, right? So considerably less than half. But the point being is that on the project that costs less, the static $22 or $34 fee is that much more of a percentage of my project. So when Aram Farouk and Quentin Zondervan, who both said in the planning board hearing that this is a de minimis cost, they're talking about $120 million labs where that linkage fee goes down to about 1% because it costs more.
Right.
And it's just like, it's that kind of nonsense that drives me bonkers, because all you have to, it's so stupid that you kind of dismiss it because you're like, I'm sure these people know what they're talking about, but I just don't think that they do. especially in cases on demand.
It seems to me that, you know, going back nearly 100 years, the purpose of zoning, this is long before anybody talked about things like incentive zoning and linkage and any of this stuff. Zoning was, you know, it was about attracting that which you wanted into certain areas and preventing that which you didn't want in certain areas. You didn't want to build the rendering plant next to the kindergarten and things like that. Right. So zoning was really supposed to be the tool for guiding a lot of this. And when incentive zoning rolled around, and I guess it would have been the mid to late 80s or something, the idea was that, well, this isn't really going to affect the planning so much as it's just going to, because what's going to happen is going to happen. We just want to make sure that we're going to address the impacts of what was going to happen because of it.
Which back then it cost $3 a foot.
Exactly. In a place like Central Square or Harvard Square, or really any kind of place that we think of as kind of a place that should have a little bit of everything we want, rather than everything we're sort of stuck with, right. That there ought to be better planning that actually builds in incentives to bring in the things that we want.
Oh my God, incentives, stop it. We don't do that. Developers are evil capitalist monsters that want to, you know, rain sadness for 1,000 years upon us all. I have to know, as a developer, I don't eat food like you do. Just the general sadness of the population is what drives me. So, the incentive piece of what you're talking about, like, we can do that and not tilt. What's happening right now is I've floated a few ideas out there to sort of help people think differently about how this all works. My dogs might attack each other in a minute. Sorry. The way that I look at it is, like, in Central Square, for instance, you don't ever want to build a lab, right? excuse me. But you want everything else. So why would we not just block labs in Central Square and get rid of the incentive zoning fee for Central Square? Because it's never going to happen.
All right, Nessie, now you're thinking creatively. Is that allowed?
No, it is absolutely frowned upon. But right. Moreover, the reason why people are afraid to touch it is because linkage hangs by a legal thread. It's really something that we all kind of, when I say we, the evil developer cabal that I actually don't belong to, they don't like to have me sit at their tables, believe me. But it's like an agreement, right? They agree to pay this thing, and they know they don't really typically challenge it. But if you actually traced it back, like we just did in the methodology of it, I'm not sure that it would stand the test in any court. That being said, we're talking about thresholds for the sizes of buildings. Boston uses 100,000 square feet as their linkage threshold. Why do they do this? Because nothing really expensive happens in a building that's less than 100,000 square feet. It's just true. The bigger developments, you need a certain footprint for a lab, you need a certain size to get critical mass. In fact, our own 2019 Nexus study says that the projects that reached the 30,000 square foot threshold all stayed below it. And then of the 28 projects that actually were paying into this fund, each individual project combined was bigger than all of those 9 projects combined to over 167,000 square feet. So if you just raise the threshold to 50,000 or 100,000, you're not taking a dime from the trust. No money is there on that table at all. But what you are doing is allowing for all these other types of, no one's going to build 100,000 square foot Applebee's, right? It's not going to happen. No, right. But someone's going to build a multi-tiered entertainment complex because you just took 8% of their budget and gave it back to them. Because that's what the impact really is. For the
Patrick, I do feel I have to warn you, you're thinking creatively, and that's stop. Simply not permitted.
It's because I'm wearing my Dollywood hat.
Okay, right. Anyway, so that's what's before the council or before the ordinance committee, not yet to the council, but I imagine whatever grows out of the ordinance committee will just get waved through. But I wish they would take a giant step back and just rethink the structure of the incentive zoning ordinance itself a little bit to get better quality output rather than just more money.
If the goal is to build more affordable housing and the goal is to get more money to fund affordable housing, there are other, better, more effective ways to do it. And that's a fact. And other places do this. There's other ways to grab tax revenues. There's other ways to incentive other types of development. There's other ways to, you know, manipulate our current inclusionary ordinance, which effectively destroys any mid-sized residential developments to actually foster these bigger things. But like I learned in my Butoh discussions, people like me, people who are in the lower threshold of development are not invited to the table. And CDD is really only wants to work with the top four large developers, MIT and Harvard, and that's it. They would prefer we didn't exist.
So you bring us back to the question of Butoh.
Yeah.
Right. Now when you were here last year, a month ago, you actually educated me quite a bit on some of the particulars having to do with electrical infrastructure and some of the demands, some of the impossibilities and whatever. Now, since then, what are some of the repercussions of some of that discussion? Because I know that there were a lot of people at that point who didn't really even know what was coming down the pike, who apparently now are alerted. So tell us some more.
I've talked to over groups representing 700 individual condominium owners who are in these buildings that will be wrapped up in Butoh. I'm just right now just getting the word out. I'm not doing it in an inflammatory way. I'm just more of a matter of fact, because I think the facts alone kind of speak for themselves. You know, and speaking of, if you're a Butoh property owner, you're about to receive a letter from me in the chamber and a bunch of other groups that explain what Butoh is. There's about 4,280 of you out there. And those letters went out this afternoon. And it has my name on it. So, you know, you can find where I live and throw a rock from my window if you don't like it. But I believe in transparency. And if we're going to have a discussion about something as important as climate change, we should really be transparent, honest, and put together a plan that actually can work. So right now, you'll be shocked to find, Robert, no one knows about this at all, other than MIT, Harvard, and a few of the larger properties that are really represented by the KSA and Kendall Square. Now, I have something next to me I want to just flash up on your screen. This is part of the reason why this is problematic right now. So MIT, Harvard made a commitment to be net zero by 2026, but their version of net zero is that they buy carbon credits and they, you know, it's more of a shell game.
It's fighting climate change through creative accounting.
Well, yeah, but in the same way, Cambridge has said, you know, and this is Quentin Zondervan and Patty Nolan, and to some extent, Sumbul Siddiqui. Mayor Sumbul Siddiqui have said, you know, we don't want you to buy those credits. We want to tax you through what's called an alternative compliance credit system, which effectively it means we believe that the carbon tax credit system is a way to buy out of climate change, and it's not really getting the job done. But we think when you buy those credits from when we tax you in Cambridge, that's fine because. I don't have an answer because it's the same thing. It's the same thing. They just want to make sure that they're getting the money and not anybody else because they think they can do something better with it or God knows what. They call it a new Green Deal, but there is no new Green Deal in Cambridge, at least not legislatively.
So in the spirit of having the wrong discussion,
sure.
All right, I want to just offer something here because, you know, I sit on the Central Square Advisory Committee and there was a project that came before us at 50 Bishop Allen Drive. Where and it was basically tear down a kind of a tired old building and put in one that's a little bit taller, a little bit more consistent with what people find perfectly acceptable these days. It's not a huge building or anything like that, but in it, the one objection I had when we first saw it was I said, do you really have to have all that big iron grid on the front of the building? Right. Well, we need that for the electrical infrastructure.
Yeah.
See, now, and now I understand a little bit more just how burdensome some of this can be.
That's
a new building. But since then, they actually came back before the Central Square Advisory Committee again. And I said, well, okay, so what are the changes? Well, we've decided now we're going to go all electric. I said, oh, really? So, and what changes are there to the facade? Did you somehow find a way to manage to minimize that sort of obtrusive, really kind of bad design, which kind of makes the ground floor kind of dreadful? And they said, no, we actually had to make it bigger. Yeah. And I thought, well, okay, Patrick, you got that right. And, you know,
I'm not lying. Honestly, like, I know people have suspicions of me because I'm a developer, I'm an attorney. As Susan Fleischer will remind me, I did at one point in time wear a Romney Ryan hat to a Cambridge meeting, which I thought was hysterical at the time.
Yes, but, I remember that.
But the point is, like, there's a way to do some of this stuff, and we keep getting sort of these false promises from city councilors, and like, there's a group called Mothers Out Front. Hi, Mom. They're pushing this idea that, you know, Ithaca right now has made a commitment to be net zero by 2030, right? You know, if they're saying essentially, it was, I think the caption on their latest Twitter was like, you know, Ithaca is doing this by 2030. Why not Cambridge? Well, I have an answer. I'm not on Twitter, but I'm gonna tell you what the answer is. Well, Ithaca gets 80% of their power from nuclear and hydroelectric.
So solving the problem for them is more like shooting fish in a barrel.
Well, but so their program is also voluntary. It also is funded by $100 million starting seed money for low interest loans that people can voluntarily initiate to upgrade their building. So there's money at almost a zero interest rate, and they already have some of the clean grid energy that we don't have. We have about 15 to 20%, depending on who you talk to, going into the river of electricity that feeds us, that is considered to be green. The idea is that 2050, it will all be green, and then we can electrify our buildings and, you know, upgrade.
So we only have about less than 30 seconds here for this segment, but we will be back three minutes later. But it sort of brings us again to the question of, are we having the wrong conversation? Because much of this conversation should be happening with entities like EverSource, it seems.
Yeah. And people who know what they're talking about.
There's sort of the bigger view, I think, that needs to be addressed here rather than just the small stuff. So anyway, we're going to take a break here, but we'll be back in 3 minutes on Cambridge Inside Out.